Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the first day of June 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and we're going to start off today with a new news category I have to call So Sick That It's Actually Funny. And it also tells us a whole lot about the state of justice, or what now passes for it, in once free, now completely communist, who are we kidding, America with a K. A jury of deep state peers in Washington District of Criminals, as expected, found Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign lawyer, the evil Michael Sussman, not guilty of a basically non-crime of lying to the FBI. Now remember, folks, if you lie to the FBI, that's a crime. But if one of Hillary's minions lies to the FBI in furtherance of the takeover of the United States, well, that's par for the course. And of course it's not a crime. This despite, says Jim Hoff of the Gateway Pundit, overwhelming evidence, in fact proof, that Sussman falsely told James Baker that he wasn't doing work for any client, which was of course a bald-faced lie, when he asked for a meeting with the FBI where he presented the bogus evidence that the Trump Tower was secretly communicating with Kremlin-tied Alpha Bank. What's the point? Undermine the new administration before it even gets put in office, as opposed to, of course, not allowing the elected administration to continue in office. About the only thing of interest that came out of the trial was that Clinton's campaign manager in 2016, Robbie Mook, testified that Hillary herself personally approved the dissemination of the disinformation, the bogus Trump Russia accusations, to not just the FBI, but the media. So let's just pause for a second and see if we got all this straight. The FBI can lie to the American people. The FBI can, in fact, incite riots and then blame it on other people and send innocent Americans to the gulag as political prisoners for daring to think that they have any rights, such as to petition the government for a redress of grievance, speak freely, or for crying out loud, keep and bear arms. And if you recognize that an election has been stolen and dare to talk about it, that is a crime. On the other hand, those who do it and then lie about it to the FBI are just fine, because that was the point. The truth is, when Orwell wrote that some animals are more equal than others, he was soft-pedaling it. Here's one also so sick it's funny, and I'll warn you up front, if you're easily offended by the truth, folks, you're probably listening to the wrong show anyway, but I'm not even going to try to pull punches anymore when it comes to really disgusting stuff being slammed down people's throats or into other orifices. Let's go right here. World Health Organization says it's very important that pride celebrations... Pride, you might be thinking? Oh, you probably know. Not pride in your family, your country, your God, your accomplishments, or anything else, but pride in, well, how it is you commit sex, especially if the Bible calls it abomination. Yeah, who may change your plans when it comes to everything else in your life, but when it comes to pride celebrations, your plans shouldn't change there over concerns around booga, 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 the monkeypox. You heard that right. Now, obviously, though, when it comes to anal sex, there's no booga-booga about it. When it's a Fauci bioweapon being used to destroy your family, your rights, your businesses, your future, certainly your health, well, you'd better wear your mask and take your poison poke and keep your blankety-blankin' mouth shut. That's what the muzzle is for. Or else. But when it comes to politically correct anti-biblical abominations, well, it's a whole different story. The World Health Organization, this is a piece from the Gateway Pundit's Cassandra Fairbanks, now says that people should not change their plans to attend pride celebrations over monkeypox outbreaks, in spite of the fact that the leading theory for the rapid spread of this newest supervirus is sex between men in two different raves in Europe. Quote, it's important that people who want to go out and celebrate gay pride, LGBTQ pride, continue to go and plan to do so, said Andy Seal, strategies advisor in the WHO Department of Global HIV, Hepatitis, and Sexually Transmitted Disease Propagation during a, I don't know if I read that right, but that's what it ought to be called, during a press conference on Monday, according to The Hill. There is no specific transmission route you need to worry your pretty little heads about, he said. Huh? So let me get this straight. A face diaper will protect you from Fauci's bioweapon because, well, science. But butt-boinkin' buddies with the pox is just fine. Obviously, when it comes to pride, as far as who's concerned, your health can go to, well, hell. These stories really aren't funny, folks, but they sure tell you, in very graphic terms, what matters. And it's not the truth. Speaking of which, that seems to go double for the marionette-in-chief, the imposter occupying the Oval Office. The official spokeslayer, K. Karine Jean-Pierre on Tuesday said the Biden regime is looking at other executive actions when it comes to infringing the hell out of what's left of the Bill of Rights, and particularly the right to keep and bear arms. Quote, it's an epidemic, she said, the gun violence we're seeing across the country. Virtually always your host notes in gun-free killing zones, and more often than not, with all kinds of suspicious other things going on as well. And we have to do something! We have to take efforts to act to protect our kids, unquote. And I gotta pause, take a deep breath, and admit, folks, that when I hear scumbags like this talk about protecting kids, it's downright infuriating, because of course they want to abort as many of them as possible before they get to be kids. These are the same people that want to kill them en masse, poison poke them, and then make damn sure that they're in gun-free killing zones so that they can have their way with them. And that's when they're not trying to groom them and mutilate their sexual organs or inject them with hormones. With apologies to Mark Twain, there's liars, there's damn liars, and then there's these people. Anyway, she continued, quote, we're looking at other executive actions that we can possibly do. Meanwhile, the Biden Fuhrer was ad-libbing on the South Lawn, sans teleprompter, and it showed, saying he wants to do all kinds of unconstitutional things like ban high-caliber weapons. And he doesn't even seem to know that 9mm isn't one of those. But that was really kind of the least of his, I'm going to call it outright what it is, idiocies. Because some of these things were just plain too stupid to be lies.
And they showed me an x-ray. He said a 22 caliber bullet will lodge in the lung, and we can probably get it out, may be able to get it and save the life. A 9mm bullet blows the lung out of the body.
Wow, even Quentin Tarantino movies don't show that. This guy's a blithering idiot. Why, he's almost as ignorant about guns as he is the Constitution.
It makes no sense to be able to purchase something that can fire up to 300 rounds.
Okay, well, that makes no sense. But at least it's not quite as asinine as the claim that a 9mm bullet will blow a lung clean out of a body.
So the idea of these high-caliber weapons is of, there is simply no rational basis for it in terms of what this is about self-protection, hunting. And remember, the Constitution, the Second Amendment, was never absolute. You couldn't buy a cannon when the Second Amendment was passed.
Actually, once again, he's a damned liar, because you could. Thomas Jefferson had a cannon at Monticello, just to make the point. On a scale of lies, though, this is kind of interesting. He was basically asked, why doesn't he just outlaw guns? And like everything else he's done, simply ignore the Constitution and do it by executive order.
I can do the things I've done, and any executive action I can take, I'll continue to take. But I can't outlaw a weapon. I can't, change the background check. I can't do that.
I can rig an election. I can destroy an economy.
And my whole career I've been doing it.
Evidently, though, when the regime really wants to pull out the stops and tell Americans what they really have planned and go way beyond the Second Amendment isn't absolute, hell, it doesn't really matter at all anymore, neither does your right to life, liberty, and especially property, well, they turn to people like Beto O'Rourke.
I just took the position that may not be politically popular, maybe too honest, that not only should no one be able to purchase an AR-15 or an AK-47 because they're designed to kill humans, and that high-impact, high-velocity round will just tear up everything inside. You'll bleed out before we can get you back to life. But I don't think that the people who have them right now in civilian use should be able to keep them.
See, that's at least honest, or as close as these people can get. You peons shouldn't be allowed to own property at all. And we do intend to pry all of it from your cold, dead hands. Well, after all of that, I guess it's appropriate to take a look at the real truth that keeps coming out about these attempts to destroy the Second Amendment by sacrificing kids on the altar of gun violence and, of course, complete disarmament of the American people, along with the elimination of the concept of private property, especially when it's constitutionally protected and the only property about which it is said shall not be infringed. The Uvalde Police Department and School District, says another piece from the Gateway Pundit, are no longer cooperating with the Texas Department of Public Safety, SICK, and their investigation into last Tuesday's latest deadly mass killing in a gun-free killing zone, said ABC News. And according to multiple reports, the alleged lone gunman, is that really true? Or did he just have a bunch of spotters working with him? Salvador Ramos spent more than 40 minutes inside the building having his way as loved ones and other people who knew better than those that were standing outside preventing them from going in begged the police to charge into the building. Police arrived just 4 minutes after the shooting began, but the alleged lone gunman continued in the gun-free killing zone with his killing spree virtually uninterrupted, while police and other law enforcement sick officers targeted, instead of the killer, desperate parents trying to save their children in the gun-free killing zone. And now, says ABC News, the Uvalde Police Department, having been caught, has stopped cooperating with Texas investigators, according to multiple sources. Although the Uvalde police chief and a spokeslayer for the Uvalde Independent School District didn't immediately respond to requests for comments. All of this happened soon after the director of DPS, Colonel Stephen McCraw, held a news conference Friday during which he admitted that the delayed police entry into the classroom was, quote, the wrong decision. Oh, yeah, and it's contrary to their established protocol as well. So the story continues, while the Uvalde Police Department and CISD police had been cooperating with investigators, they provided an initial interview, but have now not responded to a request for follow-up that the Texas Rangers made 2 days ago. A related story, courtesy of Red State News via LouRockwell.com, questions, they suggest, over the Uvalde Police Department's response, or maybe lack thereof, unless you count preventing parents from trying to save their kids, carried out on Tuesday, continue to rage. Multiple reports have painted a disturbing picture, to put it mildly, of both utter incompetence and, yes, egregious decision-making, if not outright complicity, with over a dozen officers standing by while the shooter managed unimpeded to kill 19 children. Perhaps even worse, after a tactical team from the Border Patrol arrived, they too were told to stand down before eventually disobeying the order and neutralizing the threat. Well, at least they didn't catch the FBI types in action, or did they? Maybe we'll never know. For their part, Texas DPS gave a press conference that attempted to gloss over the failings, refusing to answer basic questions about what transpired. But now it says unearthed documents are showing how protocols were violated and in shocking ways, with the police response directly contradicting the expectations they were given just months prior in regards to an active shooter situation. And, of course, the expected gun-free killing zone. The instructions, though, aren't vague. Officers were told that the first priority is to confront the killer immediately, neutralize them, and then render aid. Nowhere does it say to hang back for an hour waiting on a tactical team before preventing said tactical team from even entering the gun-free killing zone. They did want to keep it gun-free, obviously. Further, it notes that while not waiting for backup, even a single officer is expected to do his duty. And, as the story notes, that, in fact, is the job. And that comes from Uvalde PD's own stated protocols. Now, you may have heard, of course, that they hung back because, quote, they could have been shot. But it turns out that the documents specifically say that someone with such an attitude should find another line of work. But wait, there's more. And honestly, folks, I've seen this one now from multiple sources as well, or I wouldn't even want to talk about it. But given all of the chicanery that's going on and the attempted cover-up, I guess it does make sense to at least admit something else is happening here, too. The day of the Uvalde shooting, says a piece that I saw via VoxDay.net, a U.S. Army MC-12 recon plane left Fort Hood in Kyleen at 10:15 a.m. Central Time, whereupon it approached the Uvalde area, 11:02, and flew over the KUVA airport, entered the pattern at 11:16, landing at 11:25. At 12:48 p.m., the plane took off and returned to Fort Hood. Now, the story goes on to say that the MC-12W is designed to intensify data collection operations through intelligence collection capabilities in theater. And I guess you have to say Uvalde was certainly in theater last week, wasn't it? Allowing real-time full-motion video and signals intelligence, or SIGINT, for battlefield decisions of military troop leaders. And if that doesn't raise eyebrows, it should. Reports are that Ramos entered the school at 11:28 a.m. and was taken out. Not, of course, by the PD at 12:50 p.m., almost 90 minutes later. So you have to ask this question. Why would a military recon plane like this MC-12W that had never before been to Uvalde this time land there and then leave there near those same times? Did it drop someone off and or pick someone up? Did they need to collect all the cell phone activity and all the players in the area just to ensure that the future narrative doesn't collapse if some kid with a cell phone emerges with some video footage a year from now that, presents a different set of facts than the ones that they want the American dumbed down people to be aware of? You do have to ask all of these questions, don't you? And let's not forget, there was this story, too, that came out over the weekend. The Biden Fuhrer has reportedly told State Senator Roland Gutierrez that he would like to have the FedGov tear down Robb Elementary School and replace it with a new building. I guess they've learned that in the past. If you really want to destroy all the forensic evidence, you got to raise that sucker to the ground, haul everything off, and make sure that you bring in contaminated materials from off-site, too, so that there's no chain of custody remaining whatsoever. Nothing to see here, folks. Move along. With all of that on the table today, I think it's time to hearken back to almost a year ago and another story that would have, could have turned out similarly, but didn't. There was a wannabe mass shooting in Arvada, Colorado. The trouble for the shooter was, unlike in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, or the other masses of far-left gun-free killing zones in the country, most recently Uvalde, Texas, this one wasn't quite. Although Arvada, Colorado is admittedly pretty close to the People's Republic of Denver, and it's one of those places where there's enough leftist sentiment that people are understandably confused about whether it's a truly gun-free killing zone or not. But obviously in this case, it wasn't. Some, but not all of the information I'm going to report comes from local media sources, including KDVR-TV in Denver, so it's clearly much more reliable than what we're going to hear from the leftist waste stream. One of the many KDVR stories on the shootings goes like this as of Friday morning. Arvada police have not released many details of a shooting that killed three people in the downtown business district on Monday afternoon. Sources said that a gunman with a hatred for law enforcement ambushed Officer Gordon Beasley, who was killed on the scene. Witnesses said that Johnny Hurley, described by police and witnesses as a good Samaritan, then went into the fray and shot the gunman. The Arvada police chief and others in the department have called John Hurley a hero and said he almost certainly saved who knows how many other lives. Tragically, though, and I'm going to suggest it was worse than that, that's hardly the end of the story. A responding officer then shot the good Samaritan dead on the spot. And since this is such a vitally important story, I'm going to put together about six different pieces that have come out since this tragedy and see if we can't make sense of it, because there is a much more important point here that really needs to be discussed in some detail. And no, folks, you're not going to hear this on faux news, at least not the national news, certainly not on the criminally negligent networks, who will ignore it or bury it ASAP. So here's what we know so far. On Monday afternoon, says a piece from the Gateway Pundit, Bill Troyanos was working at the Arvada Army Navy surplus store when the man who turned out to be the Good Samaritan, John Hurley, came in. Hurley had only been inside for a few minutes when he heard gunshots outside, looked, and spotted the shooter on the plaza. This turns out to be Ronald Troike, who had just executed veteran Arvada police officer Gordon Beasley. Continued witness Bill Troyanos, Hurley then quickly drew his pistol from his holster and sprang into action. Quote, he did not hesitate. He didn't stand there and think about it. He totally heard the gunfire, went to the door, saw the shooter, and immediately ran in that direction, said Troyanos. I just want to make sure his family knows how heroic he was. Hurley then urged everyone to go to safety, according to a manager at a neighboring company who was requested not to be named. No surprise there. Quote, he turned back and looked toward everybody at the restaurant and told us that he, the gunman, is coming. He said he's coming and that we should get inside. I, the manager said, then ran to the back of the store, closer to the alley, and kind of nooked myself into a corner just to feel safe. Whereupon, as eyewitness Troyano says, Hurley confronted the shooter. Quote, Mr. Hurley shot him. I think I heard six shots from his gun, maybe five. And according to him, the gunman then collapsed on a parked car. All right, let's pause at the, all right, even though the action doesn't stop at this point, let's pause. Because this shooting happened on Monday, not really too far from where I'm doing this recording, in the Denver metro area of the Colorado Front Range. Most of the stories that I'm looking at from KDVR came out later in the week, some on Thursday evening or on Friday. And I didn't even see it on the aggregators I follow until Friday morning. And here's the point. For 3 days, the stories have basically said officials, and we know what that means nowadays, have not revealed who then shot Good Samaritan John Hurley and killed him. Oh, and they haven't said who shot the gunman either, although that's been obvious to everybody that was there for 4 days by now. The other thing that would have been obvious to John Hurley, at least, and the eyewitnesses there, was who the bad guy was and who it wasn't. And now I'm going to ask some other questions that just plain aren't answered in any of the coverage we've seen, although I have a strong suspicion there are plenty of eyewitnesses that could have answered it as of Monday evening. Will we ever hear from them? Who was the responding officer? How long had he been there before he shot and killed the Good Samaritan? Did he see the whole scene, or did he show up and start blasting away? And oh yeah, and by the way, I'm not blaming the local Fox affiliate. They at least did the story. Why did it take 3 days for this to come out? Fox Channel 31 says the 24 June or Thursday story has learned through sources. Notice that sources probably doesn't mean the Arvada PD, that Johnny Hurley, the Good Samaritan who stopped the deadly shooting in Old Town Arvada, was shot by a responding officer. But as of late afternoon Thursday, here's how the Fox 31 story is still summarizing things. Officer Beasley, Hurley, and the attacker all died, although it's unclear at this time who killed who, as multiple people fired shots during the initial incident and the response. I guarantee you, folks, there are several eyewitnesses that know the answers to those questions precisely. What do you bet they're not going to be on MSNBC? And here's another story, also from the very same source, posted within about half an hour of the various updates on this shooting incident, says there have been many questions asked about who shot whom at the shooting in Old Town Arvada on Monday. But, says this piece, the sheer size and number of bullets fired are the biggest challenges in investigating a crime scene like this, but just maybe the cartridges on the ground can give detectives a good idea of where shooters were standing. Or, folks, they could ask the multiple eyewitnesses or just see where the bodies fell. They quote forensic expert Jonathan Priest, who they say has investigated thousands of criminal cases, or anybody that's watched CSI or NCIS or any of the other myriad cop shows on the tube could have told you this. The fired cartridges can give you a good indication as to where a shooter might have been. Wow, I'm sure glad they told us that. Now, again, folks, I pause. Yes, I can understand the reason why the Arvada PD might delay a little while before coming out with the entire story and the whole truth. I can see that they might want to at least confirm the eyewitnesses' stories, but you'd think that a preliminary investigation of the crime scene, the spent cartridges that were recovered, the position of the bodies, and yes, corroboration with the multiple eyewitnesses might give you a pretty good idea. In spite of the relatively sparse coverage, I think most of the rest of us have a pretty good idea at this point. And I think I can safely just about guarantee you that every cop in the Arvada PD believes they know what happened. So, and I'll ask this question rhetorically, just for now, where does that leave us? Well, if you've watched those cop shows, you know exactly what the priest was going to say here. Bullets have telltale characteristics that can lead investigators to the gun that fired it. Hey, this is a no-brainer, folks. They have the bullets, they have the casings, and they have all of the firearms from the scene. There's, let's see, 4 choices. How long can that take? But this is what veteran forensic police expert Jonathan Priest says. Reported by Fox 31 as if we peons shouldn't be asking any more questions. And basically, it's, nah, don't hold your breath, because, quote, figuring out who shot whom can take a tremendous amount of time. How long it takes depends on the expertise of the investigative team, along with the tools and resources available to help them determine how a shooting went down. Your increasingly cynical host has to suggest something a bit different at this point. It also depends on the expertise of the team that's running interference, along with the tools and resources that they bring to bear to make sure the truth doesn't come out and people aren't allowed to determine the truth about how a shooting went down, especially, folks, if there was more here than meets the eye. It's been 5 months since the Capitol Hill false flag. Do we know who executed Ashley Babbitt? How many people saw the cop kill the Good Samaritan? How many know exactly who he is and aren't being allowed to say? But honestly, folks, that's not even the biggest or most important part of the story. I can see very well why they might not want this guy to be Derek Chauvin. But since your host has been watching these things for a long time, and nobody else in the Waystream media, at least, is going to ask the questions, I will. Was there an FBI handler on the scene? Was this a false flag that was set up in a wannabe gun-free killing zone to go along with all the others that are being set up nationwide to help Timo Biden and their Gestapo strike forces complete the setup to allow all of your remaining firearms to be stolen by the totalitarian regime? Because it does seem like these things only work like they're supposed to in a genuinely gun-free killing zone. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.